I'd like to talk to you about indoctrinating the preclear. This is very sequitur to how to get through to the preclear and teach him what you want and have him do what you want. A preclear is as easy to audit as he has no barriers to your auditing him. Now, first and primary barrier to your auditing him, of course, the incident which you're trying to audit. That's really the first barrier. It's been giving him trouble. Don't expect it not to give you trouble, because it very definitely will give you trouble, one way or the other. You can fully expect any incident to be a rough incident. The only mistake you will make in this regard, is to suppose that this incident follows some other laws than those you know. And that I might ask you to fix in your mind very strongly. You will learn this by experience, but at first you had better accept it on belief. That an incident, regardless of how it sounds or looks, will follow precisely the things which you are being taught about here. I noticed this in training auditors a long, long time ago, that the auditor, insufficiently acquainted with his tools, was only too happy to suddenly suppose that new phenomena, never before encountered, had been encountered by him. And therefore, use this as an excuse to change his mode of auditing, to try to make the preclear do something else, and in such a wise he would miss running the incident, and invariably and always would have upon his hands an unwell preclear. If you were to start into an incident with standard processing, and we're then to change over, after you had run an incident a time or two, to counseling the preclear. In a large percentage of the instances, you would send your preclear into a very sad, low-toned state. And you might even send him to the hospital. I am reminded one time, a fellow down at the house watched two preclears, one after the other, change from fairly alert, fairly normal individuals into sick people. He watched this one after the other. He saw one preclear go from no temperature to a temperature of 103, merely by being run down the track and run into a measles incident. He saw him turn red, saw him begin to agonize, and immediately tried to interrupt the session, and so on, because obviously the preclear was being made sick. Obviously he's being made sick. That is terrible, 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 terrible. It's horrible. This mustn't be. This mustn't be. This mustn't be. So, just for kicks, I let him take the preclear's temperature. It was found to be 103. Preclear had the clammy, cold touch. He had the semblance of a rash. He looked terrible. And this man, an endocrinologist of no repute, insisted, nay, demanded, that this preclear be sent to bed promptly, and that no more auditing be done. The other preclear was run into an incident, and I didn't finish running out the incident for the good and excellent reason that he was boiling off in it. And he had seen a man faint or go unconscious. And therefore, that person obviously needed immediate treatment, and he proceeded to try to administer it. He was making quite a nuisance of himself. And The second preclear got furious with him. Of course, a fellow who's in a boil-off, and it's rather high-tension stuff he's running, suddenly finds himself slapped in the face with a wet towel. He doesn't appreciate it. I didn't do too much to prevent all this because I was just as... I just assumed the fellow got unpopular. And the upshot of all this was that almost forcibly holding down this objector, I ran out the measles incident on the first preclear and finished the boil off on the second preclear. They both came up smiling, looking better. Temperature was normal on the first preclear. Second preclear, all the nervous tension was gone. This was really grim because it completely violated another man's reality. Utterly violated his reality. When a person gets a temperature, he has a virus, he is sick. If he is sick, he's supposed to go to bed. If a person goes unconscious, he's supposed to be revived. That was the codified reality of this person. That reality does not hold in auditing. If a preclear develops a temperature, you're supposed to run it out. And at first, you may find it very hard to believe that your preclear's temperature will go away by the simple process of auditing. All that temperature is a facsimile with a thermal in it. It's a facsimile with a thermal in it. And in order to demonstrate this, you can run any preclear or just remember vividly, very vividly remember exactly how everything was on a hot day, or run the preclear into the hot day, and he'll feel the heat again. This is thermal. Fever is no different. Now, the lesson involved is that the first few times you run somebody, follow the rules. After that, experience will tell you to follow the rules. If you don't get results on a preclear, the chances are 90 to 1 that you're not doing something called for in regular auditing procedure. The half of the remaining one chance will be that the incident has some sort of a freak phrase or twist in it that is causing an illusion, but is still running, according to rote. And the remaining one half of one chance has to do with the fact that the preclear has not been indoctrinated in running it, and he's trying to run something else. Now, one of the most discouraging things about a preclear is he very often, low on the tone scale, will be told to do one thing and will do something else. And when you try to check him up and find out if he's doing what you ask him to do, he will tell you that he is and keep on doing the something else. Preclears at 1-1 are very good at this. Very good at this. Now, I call to your attention the fact that running an incident
presents
very, very definite manifestations. An individual who's running an incident is running an incident. If they're really running the incident, they change their body positions. They are alert, interested in what they're running, and they're going on through with the thing. And they have no compunctions about informing the auditor as to what's going on. A preclear who is faking it may be running something else. They may be flopping around, but there's long pauses, and there is a perceptible gap in their answer to the auditor. A perceptible gap. And when you find a preclear who's answering you very, very slowly...
That is, say he's answering...
You ask him the question, and then there's a long gap. And then he answers it. You should become suspicious of this preclear promptly as running something else that you didn't tell him to run. What he's trying to do is reorienting himself so that he can answer you. And he's trying to think up a line. They don't think fast when they're back down the track. They just don't think fast when they're in the middle of the facsimile. And he may think he's answering right up, pop. Only he's not.
Now,
another way to prevent this is to know your tone scale and do a very, very good estimation of where your preclear is in the tone scale and look at the behavior scale on the tone scale. Look at the behavior and so forth. What can be expected out of this pretty clear? Because he'll communicate his incident to you just like it says on the chart. Let's say if he's at 1-1, he will communicate the incident or communicate with you like it says under communication on the chart. So this you must be beware. You must beware of a pre-clear running something that you haven't told him to run. You'll get pre-clears who will start wandering all over the track. And you say, now, are you running birth or something? Sorry, you're running this, you're running that? Oh, yes, 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 yes. They're up at 20 and they're down to 15 and they're lock scanning a time. When you start a pre-clear lock scanning, you don't communicate with him for quite a while. You start him in a lock scan and then you're silent for quite a while. And you'll ask him once in a while what he's doing, and so on. You quite often find that he's wandered off of the track, so you want to keep in communication with him. You start the chain for him. You start him off at the beginning. You get the information from him when he's at the end. And if he doesn't give you the information when you think he ought to, you ask him for it. Quite often you'll find he's wandered off into something else. The lesson here is that the pre-clear very often doesn't know in a befogged, anattend condition of being in the middle of some facsimile. He just plain doesn't know what he's doing, and he can't evaluate well enough what he's doing to stay on the right track to doing the most good. If some incident's telling him that it ought to be avoided, he'll avoid it. And you as an auditor are there to keep him from avoiding it. So you must remember this. So there's a happy mean between just sitting back and snoring while the pre-clear runs and sitting there and drive, drive, punish, punish, kick, kick to keep the pre-clear going. If you find the pre-clear is getting very restless and unhappy the way you're auditing him, you'd certainly better get an adjustment of pace to his tone and get your auditing procedure between you and him straightened out. You shouldn't have any trouble auditing a pre-clear. Now, phenomena that you discover should be very well known to you before you discover it. There's about 210 or something like that phenomena that have been discovered about the mind in this science. And there's about 196 of them are not in use and do not obtrude upon you. They're manifestations that you don't have much to do with in auditing. And they don't suddenly send up a red flag and tell you they're there and interfere with the auditing. So there's two ways you can learn this. You can go ahead and start to study every aspect there is to know about film recording and filing. Every one there is to know, and know them all and examine them all, and the other is to know enough to do a good auditing job. Well, of course, number two is what you should know first. And you should know number two very, very well and have all the answers right there at your fingertips so that you can just sweep him on through. And then later on, you can get interested enough when you have experience on the line to go ahead and investigate the rest of them if you want to. There's a terrific amount of mystic phenomena, for instance, that you can investigate. The time to investigate that is after you got through running incidents, because it does not obtrude upon running incidents. As a matter of fact, do you know that pre-clear can actually step up off the couch and go across the room and stand against the fireplace and watch you? Or once in a while, you'll run some mystic and he'll start doing this trick. He's not auditing. He jumps out of himself. And you call this astral walking. That's a phenomenon that's been well known. It's a phenomenon which has been around for a long time, and a lot of people can do it without any effort or trouble. It has a lot to do with auditing. But don't suppose that somebody who comes up to you and says, you know, I audit you every night, your sleep is telling you anything. He can maybe come over and stand alongside your bed and give you a nightmare, but believe me, he can't audit you. I've tested this, by the way. And such auditing is not successful. You'd be surprised. I've gotten several letters from people around the country say, I wanted to help you, so I have come down every night, and I hope my work has benefited you. I get a nightmare once in a while. I suppose that's what happens. You think I'm joking, but this is true enough. That's phenomena. It's valid phenomena. It doesn't happen to be of any use in auditing. That's all. It's not that I'm trying to be stern or mean about it. There are certain phenomena of use in auditing, and these are the ones you should know and handle. And when you get these well under control, then there's lots more. Now, I'll tell you a useless phenomenon. You can take half of the mind and set it up to audit the other half of the mind, and it will go on for 24 hours a day auditing the other half of the mind. You can take the whole analytical mind and set it up a yard or 6 yards or 8 miles from the body and have it do all the computing for the individual. Because theta does not exist in space or time, it doesn't matter what you do with this theta. You produce an illusion to this effect, and the person will answer up to it. You can take the whole analytical mind and move it out from underneath its facsimiles, for instance, and have it work the arithmetic for the individual so that he'll get his answers on a flash answer basis. You set him a problem, he'll give you flash answers. This is more or less useless phenomena. At the moment, it is. But it's interesting. It's very fascinating. Now you can set up an auditor in the mind, which will go on and audit the preclear when the preclear's asleep. Maybe you didn't know about this one.
Probably this technique will be a rampant in California 24 hours after this tape is released out there. Because it would be a very interesting thing. I can just see, they can say, this is a new way to kill preclears. We're all set now, boys. I'm not hot about California. I wouldn't say a word about the CADA. I wouldn't say a word about them. California Association out there, a good bunch of people. Of course, they don't know anything about the subject. They don't produce any results, but they're good people. They think this whole subject ought to be turned over to the psychoanalyst so that everybody can run psychodrama while standing on the top of a bottle in Central Park or something. But otherwise, they're good people. Outside of the fact that it was everybody in California that worked up... I think they call it psychodianetics or something. And the psychodianetics that was developed exclusively and wholly and from one end to the other. It was actually developed by, I think, a man named Smith or something. Or did he form the Mormon Church? Well, they're not sure either, but we'll get on with it.
What you could do is you can look at a preclear fixedly, and you can say, tonight, when you go to sleep, the left half of your mind will run the right half of your mind through all the grief incidents of any and all of your lives and discharge the grief. And you say, is this understood? And they say, yes. All right, that's fine. Now, this preclear will actually go home and put his head down on the pillow and go to sleep and wake up the next morning with a soaked pillow. He's been crying all night. You can make a preclear run out all the terror when he's asleep so that the bed is just going madly all night long and shivering and shaking. And when he wakes up the next morning, by the way, he doesn't feel any better for any of these things. Because it's sub-awareness level activity, and it is simply the restimulation of incidents and the illusion that it's being done. And to be obedient, he will simply turn on the manifestations without becoming any more aware of what's going on. Now, I know lots of them like this, just dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens
of ways to punish preclears. Dozens
of ways how the human mind can be made to react one way or the other. As a matter of fact, it is actually no trick whatsoever to make a man get very weak and give him chills, even while you're standing and talking to him. All you do is slide into his valence and think weakness and chills, and he gets them. That's funny, isn't it? Well, you maybe don't know whether it exists or not. As a matter of fact, it can't be done very often. And as a matter of fact, you probably never tried it. But it can be done. What usefulness is, that's something else. It's not useful in therapy. So this is all a very interesting array of material. Do you know that you can actually take a preclear, make him look at a flashing candle for a few minutes, and then tell him he'll forget every engram he has, and they won't bother him anymore. And he will go around assuring everybody that he's now forgotten all of his troubles and they don't bother him anymore. He's not well. He's still got the pip and the epizookics and so forth. But something has happened. Now, there are two stages of making something happen. One is to make something happen which is spectacular. If you want the spectacular, that's one thing. And if you want a preclear to get well, that's something else. Entirely something else. You could always have the spectacular. I can guarantee you that almost any preclear I take on, I can make them froth at the mouth, bark like dogs, run around in circles, scream, do anything. Spectacular. As a matter of fact, I took a preclear one time that nobody ever had. No one had ever been able to make do anything, this preclear, not in Dianetics. No one had ever been able to make this patient do anything in psychiatry. And the four psychiatrists that had treated her over a period of 8 years came down to a lecture in Oakland and managed to foist off this patient on me as the volunteer for the stage demonstration. And the fellow who was there managing the show was dumb enough to take her. And boy, she was as dumb as a wooden Indian. Woo! I came in, looked at the couch, and all of a sudden I said, holy cats, what have we got here? Here's a great big audience out there, you see, and here's this stage and so on, and I thought there's something wrong here. There's something just a little bit wrong. So I sat down, and I found out that she had been in psychotherapy for a little while. And all of a sudden said, well, they want a show, I'll give them a show. So I just turned this preclear up to 18 dozen decibels and let her scream. I turned her up to high C and then up into supersonic and kicked the windows out of the back of the theater practically. The cop in the foyer and the ushers and everybody who was anybody around the theater at all, they were coming in and they were standing there in the aisles just blanched-faced looking at this proposition, you see, because they never knew that a human voice could be this loud. There's incidents almost in any bank, in any case, that you can really start turning them up. You talk about release of affect. She was getting a release of affect, all right. And I ran her off stage. And they finished running out the incident off stage that this preclear had been, that I'd run her into. It was getting down to a point where she was only screaming mildly, so I kicked the couch off the stage and finished the lecture. Three of the four psychiatrists were sitting in the front row. And I had them spotted when they came in, and I all of a sudden realized they had something to do with this patient that I had just run, because they had come in sneering, and they were sitting there looking pale. They were actually very pale. They're very easily restimulated people. The next night, the audience was almost double. The preclear was a little bit better, too. She at least found out that she could scream that loud without splitting a vocal cord. So you can do all kinds of things in auditing.
You can do most of it.
If you know phenomena and you know the subject from beginning to end, you can play on a human being like you can play on a toy piano. That's all there is to that. There's nothing to it. I always consider it rather unfair to use any of this material for anything except working preclears or investigation. And so should you, by the way. You realize that a large percentage of the people out in the public, if you just told them to go into the engram necessary to resolve the case and snapped your fingers, the fellow would look at you rather blankly and all of a sudden probably curl up in a ball. Hey, they will. They'll do that. Particularly after this subject's reputation is way up the line. They know you're an auditor. You start looking at somebody rather fixedly and you say, you know, without much trouble, a lot of people can be rolled up in a ball on the floor, and the fellow says, yes. I kind of doubt it, he says. Well, it's like this. And as you start to raise your hand, he'll roll up in a ball on the floor. That would be shortening the technique. Now, the phenomena in which you're interested in auditing is very simple phenomena. Thought, emotion, and effort as they are recorded on facsimiles. You're interested in the fact that a facsimile can be run from the beginning of it through to the end of it, and the pre-clear and go from the beginning of it through to the end of it again. By that way, that's phenomenal. That's strange that anybody could do that, but they can do that. And you as an auditor sort of sit there as a watchdog and give him a hand. Maybe the facsimile's gotten him bogged a little bit, but you plus the pre-clear make it possible for him to run the facsimile with ease. You find that you walk 20 feet away, by the way, talking of another phenomena, you walk 20 feet away from the pre-clear, his ability to run the incident will drop. Sometimes drop enough so he can't run it. Sometimes he can keep right on running it, but not quite as well. Now, some auditors, by the way, who know the subject very, very well, can run these facsimiles beginning to end themselves. But that's not the same thing as your psycho who goes around out of valence running engrams on himself. You'll find psychos who will do this. You start auditing them. All of a sudden, they'll pick up a circuit, and they'll jump in there with that circuit, and they are always out of valence. And they swing just a little bit out of valence and start auditing themselves. Only that's themselves, see? Somebody else. And they run themselves through the incidents, and they experience the somatics and so on. What are they doing? They go into the valence of somebody trying to hurt them. This valence has the capability of hurting them. So they go right on hurting themselves. And this type of self-auditing is merely self-punishment. It's a sort of a masochistic practice. You'll find people do this. You'll find they'll do this. Doesn't do very much good. But there's no reason why a fellow in valence can't run all the engrams he wants to on himself. They're his files. He can only fail to run them when he is convinced they don't belong to him as files. He's assigned their cause to somebody else. All right. Those facsimiles contain 50 perceptics. And they are all perceptions of the physical universe. They contain sound, taste, smell, sight, hearing, thermal, motion. These are perceptions. There's over 50 of them. They contain the conclusion of the individual, his evaluations, his postulates, and those are important parts of them. And the whole thing sets up into a composite of thought, emotion, and effort. And that's what you're running. Now, you run through thought, emotion, and effort, any incident which contains thought, emotion, and effort, and if you run it through and through and through and through, all of a sudden, its thought, emotion, and effort are gone. It's a blank piece of track. It's a blank incident. Before it goes, however, you have to turn it up to its highest possible level of affinity, communication, and reality. Its highest possible level, you turn up like that, and after that it blows and doesn't bother you anymore. Quite fascinating that this happens, but that's about all the phenomena you need to know the only way you have to run it. It's true, for instance, that he can strike a phrase in an incident of somebody saying, stay down, and he'll stay down. In other words, the facsimile will give him the idea that he's still in it. But your pre-clear will only do this if he's pretty low on the tone scale. That is what is known as a holder. And there's bouncers and holders and groupers. It all happens at once, will actually operate as a grouper occurring in a heavy incident and seem to bring other incidents down on it as an illusion. But you don't have to know about that. You can audit without knowing anything about the effect of language on an engram, because it's much more important to get the effort out and get the emotion out and get the person's own postulates out than to get out what's said to him. In order of importance, the things to get out of an engram are thought, meaning the person's own thoughts, evaluations, postulates, conclusions. Emotion, the person's own emotion. The effort and counter-effort. And the inhibitors of affinity, reality, and communication. Counter-thought as the final swing. You can also take out of it counter-emotion. Now, that is the order of importance, but it is not the order used in reducing a facsimile. The order of reducing a facsimile, where you use these various items and where you address these various items in facsimile, is a different order. What I have just given you there is the order of value, the important things in the incident. And the first of importance is thought, the own postulates and self-determinism of the individual. The order in which these various things come up out of a facsimile is not completely constant. In other words, I can give you the order of importance with ease, but the order that they will appear out of the facsimile while you're auditing the preclear is not a constant order. It will vary, not only from incident to incident, but it will vary from preclear to preclear. Now, there are preclears, and when you set them up at the beginning of an incident, we'll simply sail straight through, pick up everything in it, and come out at the other end. Whew. Like that. You run them through it a few times, and it's gone, and you have not had to ask them for a single thing. There are preclears that will run through it and will get everything out of it but the effort. They will get a shadow of the effort when they get the pain. They will pick up the pains out of it without picking up the efforts and counter-efforts which create the pain. Because, you see, pain is not a separate perceptic. Pain is simply the impact of counter-effort and effort. And when it's too much impact, you get too much randomity. And that too much randomity is pain. When these two things come together, the immovable body and the irresistible force, impact, why, the result is registered as pain. So that they will get these high points of pain. They'll just get the pain, and they'll run through, and they'll consider that they've run the incident. Actually, in addition to that pain, is their effort and the counter-effort, and the incident cannot be considered to be erased until the effort and counter-effort is out of it. So you want to watch that. Now, the very sticky sort of a case may start running nothing but effort. And all you can get off of this case is really just some effort, some counter-effort. And you fool around with effort and counter-effort and effort and counter-effort, and all of a sudden some emotion appears out of it. And so you run the emotion. And after you've run the emotion for a while and run the emotional curves particularly, all of a sudden, here come the postulates. Because what the preclear thought himself is important.
Far important.
Far more important than what was said to him or what someone else thought about it. Now, therefore, the usual order of affairs running preclears is you're liable to get some pain and some effort and some counter-effort, and then you're liable to get some emotion, and then you'll get some postulates and conclusions. That is, maybe the first run through, maybe you'll get nothing but a little effort. Maybe the next run through, why, you'll get some effort and counter-effort. The next run through, you get a little bit of emotion. The next run through, you get some more emotion. Then the emotion becomes very plain, and then all of a sudden, postulates start to fly out of this. About the fifth run through, you start to get the postulates out of it. That's quite ordinary as an order. But in many cases, all you'll find there, when you run it through the first time, is emotion. No postulates, no intentions, nothing, just nothing but emotions. And you run them through from beginning to end, and you'll find they're running nothing but emotion. And out of this emotion may fly postulates, or out of this emotion may fly effort. It may go either way, because on either side of emotion, above emotion, you have thought, and below emotion, you have effort. So you just have to reduce this as it comes up. Then you will find that your pre-clear doesn't have a very good evaluation of what he's doing. He has a very poor evaluation of what he's trying to do. And he'll start floundering through, and Lord knows what he isn't running. You take somebody that's been through 7, 8, 10 years of psychoanalysis, been psychoanalyzed 4 times a week for 10 years. He's probably a pretty sick boy. He has nearly every incident in the bank stirred up. In other words, this fellow's all piled up with facsimiles, and he isn't able to make anything out of them. He tries to run one incident, and he's into another incident. And all this time, you may think he's running a facsimile, but actually, all he's doing is running some kind of a concept of what his facsimile was evaluated to be by somebody else. He's not running effort. He's not running thought. He's not running emotion. He's sitting way up in present time or back on the track someplace, taking a long telescopic view of something. The auditor who does not know what his preclear is running is in a very bad condition, because preclears can run the whole thing out of a vague memory of what somebody told them, and the auditor may think he's running the incident. You get the idea. But if he just asks the preclear, now how are you getting this? And the preclear describes, I'm getting it all right. Well, what are you getting? Well, it's just like my mother said. What did your mother say? Well, I remember now, she said so-and-so. What are you running in the incident? Well, it's what she said, of course. What else could I be running? You're dealing with somebody who can only do what somebody else told them they could do, you see? You're running somebody with facsimile one in full bloom, by the way. Well, that's a very interesting case. And you've got to do some light lock scanning and a few other things. You've got to do some indoctrination on this person. By the way, if you do meet somebody who's been psychoanalyzed, take some lock scanning and wipe out the psychoanalysis. It only takes a few hours. At the outside, sometimes you can do it in 10 or 15 minutes. I pride myself in being able to knock out 5 years of psychoanalysis in 5 minutes. It's wonderful. I had one fellow one time that had been treated by psychoanalysis for ulcers for a long time, and he'd finally learned to live with them. And if he was very careful and he didn't get off base in any way, why, he just felt fine. And he sort of talked this way as though he were just on the verge of falling off a cliff, or as though he were walking a girder 100 feet in the air or something. And when did your analyst first tell you were cured? Oh, he said, I don't recall. He did tell me I was cured. Let me see. Where was he sitting? Well, he was sitting at his desk. No, he wasn't. He was standing out in the hall when he told me that. And I was standing there. And he says, now, he said, you'll just have to learn to live with it. That's right. That's what he said. Just have to learn to live with it, and hand yourself carefully and be careful of what you eat, and remember to live for the moment. Don't try to plan into the future. And, his ulcers were right back. What it was a hypnotic cutoff, really. He'd gone in to report with the analyst, and the analyst had shut off the ulcers with a command. And all I had to do was get him to recall the moment it was shut off with a command. Of course, the ulcers came back on instantly. So he sat there and was very sick, and he writhed and so forth. And I said, well, what happened to the psychoanalysis? It only cost you $15,000. And I lock scanned him over all the times he had thought to himself that he was going to be sick. And we lock scanned all of this, and he came out of it, and his ulcers didn't bother him. And it took an hour or something like that. Do you get the idea of the impact and power of your techniques? By the way, I'm not laughing at the psychoanalysts. I sympathize with the boys. The moment they departed completely from Freud and said that Freud was no good, they ceased to do very much. And Freud and Breuer, by the way, with their catharsis treatment, were not doing what modern psychoanalysis is doing. Freud and Breuer were doing quite something else. All right. They spent a lot of time, by the way, and Freud spent a lot of time trying to explain how he was doing it. He never succeeded. which makes people suspicious of one-man therapies. They think that they fall into terms of faith healing. All right. So apprise yourself of this pre-clear film storage bank. Find out who else has been handling it, and find out how he customarily handles it, and for heaven's sakes, find out how he's handling it when he's on the couch. Because you may ask him, now, let's run some postulates out of this, and you think he knows what postulates are, but your code system is broken down. You haven't explained to him what you mean by postulates, and so you will fail in trying to run postulates. Instead of this, he's running back the time he took geometry or something. He thinks that's what you mean. And when you say run effort, why, he knows what you mean by effort. That's emotion. And when you say, now, run the emotion off of this, he says there's no emotion on it, and there's just apathy. Of course, apathy is emotion. So is determinism, by the way. These are emotions. Tell him to run the emotion out of this, and he said there is no emotion here. Well, can you get the feeling of having to endure? If he's very low tone, and sure, I can get the feeling of having to endure. Well, run the feeling of enduring off of the incident, and you've got the first emotion. You get the idea. If he'll run through a feeling on the incident, you ask him for a feeling or how he feels about it, you will very often get something that he doesn't bother to articulate, but you'll be getting the thing that's supposed to come off the facsimile. You get the idea. You don't have to get too technical with him. But a good way to indoctrinate him is to hand him a chair and say, pick that up with your right hand, and he does. Then you take the chair and you say, all right, take it away from him, and you say, all right, run through that. And he says, what do you mean run through that? Well, go back to the moment you picked up the chair and heft it again. No, don't reach for the chair. Just heft it again as though you were imagining it was happening or something, you know. So he does, and do that now until you get the weight of the chair in your hand. Well, yeah, I can do that. All right, that's effort. Now run it through 3 or 4 times. He does. And you see, the effort is going out of the incident. That's right. Well, that's reducing effort. Oh, is that what you're talking about? Well, that's fine. Then if you hit him on the shoulder, slap him on the shoulder, something like that, and say, now that's a counter effort. Now let's go back through it again and run out that effort of the impact against the shoulder. He maybe runs his own effort to resist the impact. You can tell if he's doing this. And you say, now, get just the force hitting your shoulder, not your shoulder's force hitting back at the hand. And he works at this and works at this. And you say, you know, it's the effort of the atmosphere or the environment. It's the atmosphere or environment's push against you, or its action against you. That's what we're looking for. Oh, is that what it is? Yeah, I can get that. Now you've got his effort, and you've got counter-effort differentiated for him. Now you say, all right, now let's run an emotional curve. How do you run an emotional curve? Well, can you pick up a time when you felt happy and somebody said something to you and you felt sad? Can you pick up that? Mm-mm. Well, can you pick up the last time you felt good and somebody told you you shouldn't? Oh, yeah, my wife. Oh, all right. Pick up the last time this happened. Now, well, I can't remember it. Well, feel as you would feel just before she said something, and then feel how you would feel after she said something. Okay, now feel just before. You got that feeling? Yeah, he says, yeah, I got that. All right, now get the feeling just after. And he sort of slumps. He says, all right, I got that feeling. Now get those two feelings, one after the other. The fairly cheerful one, and then the sad one. Now, see if you can get the feeling of dropping down through several emotions to get through the sad one. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got that. Yeah. All right, he's running an emotional curve. And by the way, if you make him run this several times, he's going to wind up at the beginning of a service facsimile lock. He'll wind up in a heavy incident if you don't watch it, because this emotional curve precedes all heavy incidents. Now, that's an emotional curve. You say, Now, we're going to let you, if he's having awful time feeling emotion, as many people do have, you say, now we're going to feel one emotion. Have you ever felt afraid? You remember a time when you felt afraid? You remember a time when you felt grief? You can exercise him on these that are the tough ones first. He can't feel these. All right. Maybe he can. That's fine. But let's say he can't. Now, you remember a time when you felt determined about something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I feel like that all the time. Well, experience that. Okay, he said, I'm experiencing it right now. Okay, that's an emotion. Oh, he says, is that an emotion? Well, all right, I feel that. I feel that all the time. Well, let's feel that up and down the track a few times. I mean, let's feel it in various situations. Let's re-experience this. And all of a sudden, we're right on the chain, central aberrative chain. His feeling of determination, which is continually blunted. And he'll suddenly start hitting not just the determination, but he'll hit the blunting and his drop in tone. You get him to run this as an emotional curve. Or maybe the pre-clear is a bit in apathy, and you say, run an emotion. He said, I can't run an emotion. Well, run the feeling of apathy. I can run the feeling of apathy. By the way, that's all he feels all the time. You say, run the feeling of enduring.
How do you feel?
Feel how you feel when you have to endure something. Okay. All right, that's an emotion. Oh, is that an emotion? Well, I feel like that all the time. Well, let's just run it for a while. And sure enough, you're right into the central computation on the case. Now, you can make them feel shame. Not shame for themselves, but if you pointed out, have you ever been with somebody else and you felt shame for them when they didn't feel it? They'll say, oh, yes, that's my Aunt Tibia or something. Yeah, I can remember a lot of those, and they kind of color and blush and squirm a little bit. Yeah, that's when she balls out waitresses. And you say, all right, now let's feel this up and down the bank several times. And sure enough, you pick a lot of emotion off the case. And that's emotion, and that's very valid stuff to get off of a case. All right. This indoctrination should include what you mean by a facsimile. And you can say a facsimile is just the picture you took of what was happening. And the guy says, well, I never thought of it that way before. Well, try and get the picture of you sitting at the breakfast table or sitting here or there doing something. Well, I don't know. Well, I got a picture I see all the time, he says. Was that the only picture you got? Yeah. Yeah, it's the only picture I got. That's it. Yeah. I never thought about it before, but you know, I got this picture all the time. I see it all the time. It's a picture of my dog. You say, when did the dog die? And the fellow said, well, that's right. The dog did die. You say, well, just let's run the feeling of regret over it. Do what? He said, well, just look at the picture and feel regret. And feel regret over it a couple of times. And the fellow says, yeah, I did, and it went away. Well, feel regret across it a couple of more times. Yipe, there's the dog busy dying. You probably blow a grief charge, something like that. Because people retain pictures, which are sad pictures, which they regret because they're trying to work the incident over again, you see? And so you have opened a case which is practically unopenable. And then there's the case to end all cases, and now we're getting a tougher, tougher cases. I've been talking about this stuff. The case which is completely blank from one end of the track to the other, and it's all black, and there are no pictures of any kind. And they can't feel an effort, and they can't feel a counter-effort, and they can't feel an emotion, but they can tell you about the time the Empire State fell on them because they know the Empire State did fall on them or something like this. You can work as an auditor and sweat, slave, squirm, and try to do something about this case because this case is maybe you can't get them to run anything. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. There's something that case can run. This comes under the heading of cause and effect, regret and blame. The action of regretting something is the action of trying to get it undone. Regretting means, I wish I could do it all over again. I wish it had not happened. Meaning, the best way to dispose of this incident is to get ahead of it and get before it so that it didn't happen. And if you simply run the incident backwards from the end to the beginning, running all actions backwards, you take the regret off of it. You run the incident backwards. These are just strips of film, by the way. They go backwards or forwards. You can run them either way. People are accustomed to living life by running the film forwards. The film runs forward through life all the time, so they think their film can only run forward. This isn't true. It's just film. They can turn around and run it backwards, too. And when they run it backwards, the regret and the feeling of regret will come off of it. This is a quite handy thing to know, because most of your pre-clears are stuck just before some incident, which they are deeply regretting. And if they have a picture of the incident, they're blaming themselves for it. They say, I am the cause of this. I regret it, therefore I don't dare act about anything, and I better stay right here, just ahead of this incident. So there's that incident in restimulation. You say, run it backwards a few times. The picture goes, the incident will blow, and you can get rid of it and get on to something else. Now, when the person has no picture of any kind whatsoever, it means that they are assigning cause to everything and everybody else in the universe but themselves. You see, a fellow shouldn't either blame himself or blame others. Blaming is just assigning cause. So he blames the whole universe around him, but never anything else. He shouldn't be blaming himself as an alternative to this, by the way. He just should be able to accept the fact that he can cause things. He isn't doing this, all right? His track will be blank. Why? Because, simply, he has disowned the physical universe. He say, I didn't cause it, and it isn't my fault, and it was other people's fault, and I am no cause, and I had no part of it. I am guiltless. I'm not to blame. So he says, I can't handle my own facsimiles in the same breath. It's other people's causes, other people cause, so other people cause my facsimiles too. You get how that would be? The facsimiles are of the physical universe, which he has disowned. So he's also disowned the facsimiles as well as the physical universe. He disowns the picture with the actuality. And therefore, you ask him to run something, and of course he can't because it doesn't belong to him. He can't handle it. It's not his fault. And you get somebody with a completely black track with absolutely nothing on it at all. You can get things onto that track and get incidents on it by running, blaming others. Just have him scan, blaming others through incident after incident. And the first thing you know, he'll start to get some concept of pictures and reality on it.
Of course, you...
The reason why the individual is completely occluded is because he's stuck in the middle of a black incident. And visio on facsimile one is black, blackness. And visio in those things we used to run and don't anymore, prenatals, is all black. And as a consequence, the individual is stuck or held in an incident. But let's reverse it around. He is, after all, self-determined. So to some degree, he is holding a facsimile in front of him, which has a black visio. And instead of looking at other facsimiles, he's trying to look through this facsimile at other facsimiles. And of course, he can't see them. He's doing all of his thinking beyond this facsimile, which he's trying to think in and act in and be in all the time. So he's being and acting and working in this one facsimile, while these other facsimiles parade on by. This doesn't mean that all of his facsimiles are black now. It means that when you get rid of this black visio facsimile, and when you knock that out, he's no longer having to regard life through that exclusively, so he sees, feels, and hears his regular facsimiles. In other words, the I, the individual himself, has recorded these facsimiles. These facsimiles are in existence. It is just whether or not he chooses to try to get to the other facsimiles he has through a facsimile he can't see through or hear through. In other words, he has a facsimile blocking off his facsimiles. He's holding on to one through regret, blame, or pain, or something of the sort, so solidly that he can't see, feel, or hear any of the other facsimiles. And this also is emotion. A case is determined in its position on a tone scale by the tone of the moment in the facsimile which the case is holding all the time. Now let's take a facsimile which the patient has, the preclear has continually. He holds this facsimile before him all the time. Where is he located in the facsimile? This should be of great interest to you. You think of cases normally as having all their facsimiles in apathy if they're in apathy. No.
There is an apathy underlying all their facsimiles.
There's an apathy underlying all the facsimiles taken since he came into apathy. But if you knock out that basic facsimiles, the others turn up with a different tone value. You understand how that is? So here is an individual going along consciously. and all of a sudden goes unconscious. At the deepest point of the unconsciousness, in the center of it, the deepest part of the swing, the person is in apathy. He's almost dead. On the tone scale, he's dropped down to 0.1. He's unconscious, he's almost dead. But there's still 0.1 between him and death, by the way. So he's not completely gone. Up here, he was angry when he went into this incident. He was trying to hold on. He was trying to make him stop. So his tone, the tone of this point is anger. The tone of this point is apathy. Over here, let us say, as well as here, here and here on the incident, are points of fear. He's become very afraid all of a sudden. He was angry. Now he's found out his anger didn't work, so he drops down tone scale. Although he's going unconscious all this time, he becomes afraid. And his fear brings him down to this point. Now a little bit lower than this, in it, he's actually in grief there. And he's in grief there as he comes up out of it again. Now, there's effort and counter-effort at each one of these points. And there's also postulates at each one of these points. And his life has summed up in such a way that he's holding on to this unconsciousness facsimile at one of these points on the dip. He's either holding on to it at anger, he's holding on to it at fear, at grief, at apathy. One of these points, he's holding on to it. And that determines his chronic tone. See how this would be. Now, he can vary a little bit from that chronic tone, but not much, if the facsimile is really strong. Facsimile 1 has an enormous variability of emotion throughout the thing, and it all depends on where the individual was chronically hung up in it, what his tone was. If you can get him jarred loose from that point to a higher point, he will run as an entirely different case. You follow this, because it's quite important for you to realize that it isn't something physiological or it isn't something wrong with the guy's theta that puts him into a low tone. Nor it isn't a quantity proposition. It doesn't mean he is in a low tone because all the incidents of his existence are low-toned incidents. No, there's one that is. One point, the first point on the track, that is the first point where this individual is holding on to a low-tone facsimile, is the first thing that determines this low tone. And as that thing is re-stimulated, that is, he uses it more and more and more and more and more, he more and more chronically becomes this tone until you as an auditor come along and knock him out of it. You knock him out of it, you'll change his tone. And you can change his tone lower or higher at will, particularly when you're addressing facsimile 1. You can move him all over the tone scale in facsimile 1 just by moving him at different points of the incident, different levels of unconsciousness, which are different points of emotion, through different postulates in it. He looks like a roller coaster if you graft him on a tone scale. Up, down, all over. There's high manics. There's hate. There's fear. There's terror. There's confusion. There's apathy. There's cowardice. There's braveness. There's everything on that thing. Because the people they were doing it to, namely you, were very volatile. Volatile in their emotions. And so they really responded on this one. All right. This then gives you some idea what you're trying to take out of an incident. If you have a preclear that's very, very low on the tone scale, may be possible just for you by shifting him a little bit. In fact, facsimile 1, to find yourself operating a fairly high tone preclear. Just as easy as that. If he's in apathy and you want to bring him up the tone scale a bit, just lighten up the point he's sitting on. It's an apathy point. Make him scan times he felt apathetic, and you'll get all the locks off, and all of a sudden the basic apathy incident will show up. Run him through the basic apathy incident, making him experience the feeling of apathy, and he'll start coming up the tone scale. That's how you resolve it. Very often you will find a case is too spooky, too low on the tone scale to work with heavy auditing. That is, work heavily through heavy incidents. In that case, you work them with the handbook. You escort them very carefully. You work with them. If they're psychotic, you use the 10 basic steps which appear in the handbook and tell you how to audit psychotics. We're assuming the bulk of your people will not be that low on the tone scale. You have no business fooling the psychotics. Not that you can't handle them, but somebody had better take that up whose work will lie definitely in that field. And there's nothing wrong with it. You can handle psychotics, but it's a rather thankless task. For a little while, what I'm trying to encourage you to do is get out there and improve the able up to such a point the whole tone of the society will kick up the line and they'll take care of their psychotics. Working on psychotics is not a good road for you to take at the moment.
Now,
therefore, you take low-tone preachers, put them on a handbook, and let them work on the handbook. Even have somebody else read the handbook to them. Do various things in order to bring them up the tone scale. And you'll get them up the tone scale a ways, and then wham, you should be able to carry them on through the remaining heavy incident, which you have to audit in order to clear the case.